I'm home.
Hi, have you got a cup of tea?
I've got a cup of tea in my hand.
Okay. While you're reading that, you do know you've been recorded, of course, I suppose. It'd be a bit pointless doing this interview.
Right.
All right, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and I want to do an interview today because we're short of shows. In actual fact, we have only two people with shows in the queue. So it's 5150 and a hookah. So I really hope you're out there busy recording your shows. But anyway, back in episode 980, we did an interview with somebody about broadband for the rural north. And I'll just read what it is. Located in the very pretty but rural forest of Bowland in Lancashire in the UK. And tired of putting up with their slow broadband, they decided to put together their own network. They tried sharing Wi-Fi, 3G, 4G mobile networks, MMDS and satellite, and yet all proved unreliable. So over tea and cake, they came up with a plan, a 240-kilometre, 150-mile plan, a 1 gigabit per second fibre optic connection plan, and a plan that will connect every one of the 1,700 homes, farms, schools, churches, businesses in the area. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to bring back to you, to Hacker Public Radio, Chris Condor. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you, Ken.
I'm very, very glad to have you on the line because I've been absolutely plagued with problems all evening, and it's very likely that this may go in the bin. But tell me, this is the most requested interview I've had on Hacker Public Radio. It's people have been bugging me for basically a year, however long it has been since our last episode, to get a catch-up episode, and I thought, hey, what a handy thing to do. So how has things been over there?
Oh, brilliant. Yes, brilliant. And your idea of the sponsored duct, it's smashing. We even got Peter Cochran. Have you heard of Peter Cochran?
Yep.
He's a big fibre evangelist, used to work for BT, and he goes all over the world talking about broadband and advising different governments. Yeah, he's sponsored a meter of our duct. And that's all thanks to your idea on the last Hacker Radio show that we did.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
So how's it been going? Have you been able... The last time we were talking to you, I think the duct had been laid and you were just about getting ready to blow some fibre. So how did that go for you?
How did the blowing go? Oh, that was a steep learning curve. Yeah, we had two blockages and the fibre wouldn't blow through it. And so the blowing people had to go away. So we then had to wait for weeks till the blowing people came back because we were doing it as a favour for us. And we thought, this is ridiculous. We're going to have to get our own blower and learn how to blow properly ourselves. And so we bought a blower. And we've come up with the theory that whenever we're blowing, we have four good strong men with spades. And if the blowing stops, we also have a little wheel, and the blowing machine says how far the fibre's blown, 100 metres, 200 metres, 500 metres, and you walk with the wheel to where the fibre's stopped, you dig in and you find out what's the matter with your duct. One time it was where it was mole plied in and a stone had moved sideways and crushed the duct.
Oh.
Yeah, and another time, again it was a stone, and it was a piece that I actually took a photograph of them laying that bit of duct, and I know it was laid very carefully, but they'd obviously missed a stone, and the ducting was laid on a stone, and it was backfilled carefully by hand, as we do, for about four to six inches, and then the diggers backfill the rest of the trench for you.
Yeah.
And so that's how it was done, and I saw that bit being done, and... like I said, they missed a stone, this ducting ran over the top of a stone, and when the weight of the whole trench came down upon it, it bent it over the stone, and just that little bend was enough to stop the fibre blowing. So we don't get caught out like that anymore. Everything that goes wrong is a really good lesson for us, so we don't sort of moan and groan about it. We think, great, well, we know how to sort that one next time. And since then, we've had the mice. Have you heard the story of the mice?
I've seen the videos. Go on, tell us.
Yeah, well, this farmer said, I've got 100 metres of duct running through that field, and it carries all my electric wires to light up this corner of the field where they have a menage thing for the horses, and they exercise the horses in it. Instead of digging all that way and crossing more electric lines because he has a windmill and water pipes and all sorts of things. So let's just shove it through the duct. So we said, oh, great, that's a good idea. So they did. And our 16mm duct went through his 3-inch duct. And we thought, job done. And that was part of the main core route that lit up the second village. And came the day we wanted to turn it on, right before Christmas, we wanted to go live in that village hall before Christmas, and it wouldn't work. And we have what's called an OTDR tester, which tells you just how far the light's going up your fibre. And we plugged that in, and it said it was 3,010 metres or something. And so we knew that was fairly close to this farm and a bullet in the access chamber. So we thought, well, it's probably a fuse in there that's not been done right, or there's a bend or something.
Can you just tell but people what the bullet is?
The bullet is where the main core duct goes through a hole in the ground with a lid on, and inside it is a plastic-like container full of little trays, and the fibre goes into these trays, and then customers are joined on with their own fibre, because each customer gets their own fibre.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it's probably a splice in there. But we went and looked, and it all looked fine, and we put a tester on the bullet and tested back to the village hall, and it only went 84 metres.
Oh.
So we measured that out with our little wheel, and lo and behold, it was right in the middle of this duct. And we thought, well, we dug down to the duct. There's nothing wrong with the duct at all. We thought, what can it be? And as soon as we saw that his duct was intact, I just knew in my heart of hearts it was either rats or mice, because they nabbed me at the farm in the silo building chewing through cables.
Yeah, I've had that.
And so we opened his duct, exposed our duct, and, yeah, chewed all the way along the length, about 10 metres, little holes and big holes. And in this one particular place, it actually chewed through the fibre and snapped the fibre. They don't chew right through the fibre, because as soon as they hit the fibre, it makes the gums bleed because it's so sharp, you see.
Yeah.
So, but the damage was done. They'd broken the fibre and we couldn't go alive. And we were absolutely gutted. And then we thought, well, right, we've got to fix this now. How are we going to fix it? And we thought, well, we can get some armoured fibre and we can, put another joint in here, which you don't want all these joints, but, I mean, needs must. So we put another join in and replaced 100 metres of fibre with armoured fibre, and we spoke to loads of different people as to how you stop rodents getting in your ducts. And the answer seemed to be steel wool, because they don't like chewing through steel wool. They'll pull it out, but they won't chew it because that cuts the little gums.
Mm-hmm.
And rodents have to chew to saw down the teeth, otherwise teeth grow too long. That's why they chew, not because they're hungry. And so you put your steel wool in the end of your duct, and then you get builder's foam and squirt that in, and that sets hard.
Yep.
And then they chew through the builder's foam, hit the wire wool, that hurts the teeth, and they stop chewing and they leave your ducts alone. So we made all this information public, and every time we do something wrong, we try to make it public so that other communities who are doing this sort of stuff they can learn from our lessons. And if you're going to use some ducts, you've got to make sure both ends are sealed up and the little blighters can't get in and buy plenty of mouse poison.
Or humane traps, whatever way you want to go. Just want to let the listeners know just for a second that there are loads and loads and loads of videos of all this stuff.
Oh, loads of them. Loads of them. I've been doing some more today, fusion splicing today.
I'm actually thrilled every time I see it. Oh, look, there's somebody else has put their name on it. It's really cool. But for our listeners, you mentioned there in that conversation that each customer has their own fibre. And I know you mentioned that the last time, but it was only when I saw the videos that I realised that what you're saying is each customer has their own fibre the whole way from their house right back to the head end. Is that correct?
Yes. And then there's a gadget in the hub. We call it the hub, but I think its proper name is the head end. I'm not really technical. But then there's this WDPM or something kit, which gives every single customer their own 1 gigabit pipe back to peering in Manchester, which is where our closest peering centre is at Media City in Manchester.
Unbelievable. So have you connected up any of the customers at all?
Yes. And I'm starting to personally connect them up because they've discovered that girls can fusion splice.
Can they
especially
now?
Especially when the boy fusion splices poorly. And our best fusion splice happens to be poorly. And we've got fusion splicing that needs to be done, so I've been doing it.
I've been looking at all the videos, and you must be spending an amazing amount of time out of the house.
Oh, yes, I'm full-time on this, full-time volunteer doing this. Yeah, totally mad, but, you know, you do get these mad people, and every community has these people who are, you know, just determined to get on with it and get the job done. You know, we've got some brilliant people now coming through the ranks, so you get your average volunteers who are happy to do the Saturdays, but they work all week, and then you've got volunteers who use the days off to come and help you, and then you've got some that are really, really good at certain things, and so they end up being in charge of it.
Yeah.
We've got a brilliant blowing man, and he's a shepherd, actually, so he's quite busy at the moment lambing sheep, but he's shown quite a few of the other villagers how to do it, so we can still keep blowing customers till he's finished lambing.
So
good organisers as well.
Yeah.
We've got some really good organisers come through the ranks, and logistics are half the trouble, getting stuff to people when they need them, and these people are organising it and they're self-organising. They only have to, you know, they're quite, well, they're all bright people, and they know what needs to be done, and they just get on with it. Once you've shown them once or possibly twice, they just get on with it and they do it. They can see it has to be done and nobody else is going to do it for them. So they learn these skills, and then when we can afford to pay them and when we've got proper jobs to offer people, they will get those jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not an unuseful thing to be able to blow fibre or spice fibre.
It is not. If I wanted a fusion splicer, I have to pay £300 a day for a good fusion splicer. The cheapest one I've found is £120 a day. But we've got a very, very good fusion splicing training centre just over the border in Cumbria. It's called Lucid. And they train fusion splicers. And what they find is these people want some experience. And so when they get a good lad coming through the training, they say to him, if you want some experience, go and help Barn for a few days. And they'll put you a video up and things like that. And you'll get the experience to put on your CV. You won't get any money because they're not paying anybody. And these lads volunteer to come and help. We've had a couple of really good ones from Lucid. Because Lucid are really good trainers. It's a long course, a City and Guilds course.
Yeah.
But because they're like in the same position as us, they're in a very rural area, and they're building their own fibre network too, called Fibre Garden.
Oh, fantastic.
You might have seen that on Twitter and on the web. They're really on our side, and so they train three of us, just a fusion splice, not the full training course, because, of course, we can't afford to pay for the full training course, but enough to be able to operate a fusion splicer.
Fantastic.
And then the three of us that went, we have then trained some more people to use the fusion splicer. And just tonight, on the way home, I had to stop and pick up some pigtails, and the lady of the house gave me the pigtails, and she said, I've been thinking about it, Christine, and I think all the ladies of the village should learn to fusion splice. So this is the WI...
No, Women's Institute, that's the ladies' organisation.
Yeah, and she said, I'm sure, you know, we're all very dexterous with our fingers, with the knitting and the flower arranging and everything else. Can we all learn to fusion splice? And I thought, why not? We'll have the Wild Indians fusion splicing.
Now, a few things we need to clear up for our listeners. Fusion splicer is a way to join fibre ends together, I'm guessing.
Yes. All you do is you have these two little tiny wee fibres that are only the thickness of a hair, and you've got to strip the outer coating off with a special little tool, strip the plastic coating off. So all you've got is a very, very fine strand of glass, and you put the two fine strands of glass into the fusion splicing machine after you've cleaned it and trimmed the ends, and the fusion splicing machine fuses those two ends together So it's an unbroken piece of glass. And that's all fusion splicing is. And each customer needs 6 splices because they have 2 fibres into the house, and then it goes into the hole in the ground somewhere outside the house into this bullet thing, and then the fibre goes right the way back to our cabinet, and there's 2 fusion splices in there to do. So you 6 splices to do per customer.
So why is there 2 fibres to every customer?
We always have a spare. Because what we think is, you know, some television companies might not want to be on your broadband. They might want their own fibre to deliver, you know, television in the future. They might, I don't know. But also, one of the main things we're thinking of is healthcare. And with healthcare, the healthcare professionals don't really like to be on an ordinary open network. I think they would want their own personal fibre to the home for the care of the elderly in their own homes. You don't know what's in the future. And if you're putting a fibre in, you might as well put a spare in, mightn't you?
Absolutely.
So
couldn't agree with you more.
It doesn't cost us any more, does it?
No, it doesn't. And you could also, I'm guessing if a company was listening to this and decided to, you know, base up there, they could run, use both of those fibres with coloured glass, and then, you know, could have 200
units. If there was a company here that really wanted something super duper, we do provide a 10 gig service. I mean, I don't think anybody will want it in a rush. But if a data centre wanted to come and establish itself in our valley, it could have its own 10 gig feed. Well, it could have 2 actually, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 20 gig.
And you mentioned pigtails. What are they?
The pigtails, they're the little bits of fibre with a specialist end already made on them.
Yeah.
And they're what plug into all this fancy equipment that runs the network. There's a fancy bit in your house. Called a CPE, client premise equipment, which is a little box on the wall, and that has a pigtail in it joined onto your fibre. And then there's, when you get back to the cabinet, there's another pigtail which plugs into these fancy routers with flashing lights and does all fancy things and makes your data fly to gig.
And tell me this, and a lot of people listening to this will have, you know, we have a lot of people who work in data centres and stuff, so fibre is no big strange thing to us. But I was fascinated to see the logistics of what you needed to do to get it into the ground and to build a network. This is just something that we never see, hence, I guess, the amount of interest people have had in this episode and in your project in general. Has anybody else, I know you mentioned somebody, Fibre Gardens across the valley, has anybody else come and been inspired or, you know, taken any of the lessons that you've learned and gone with them?
There's quite a few community groups been to visit us. We don't have a terrific lot of spare time to give to people, and we've had far more inquiries than we can deal with, and a lot of them are very early stage inquiries, so there's a lot of hand-holding to do with people who are just thinking, what can we do to get some broadband into our area? It's really hard. There's another group started up that knows a lot about all the groups who are trying to do things, and they're trying to pull together sort of a database of helpers, like a mentor group. So I tend to field a lot of inquiries off to them because they're really good at sussing out what it is community is like, is up for, its geographical status, whether there's a fibre near them that they can join to, you know, a dark fibre to lease. Like, we were lucky because we can lease this dark fibre in 2 of our villages at each end of the network.
Yeah.
With a dual feed in, so it's got this resilience, you know, I think they call it, redundancy, whatever. But all that sort of fact-finding, we haven't time to help communities with that, but there are an awful lot of communities now thinking of doing it for themselves because they realise, you know, they're still going to be left behind if they don't do something themselves.
Absolutely, I see it. So if there was a project, for instance, there was a guy and his brother who wanted to go over and volunteer for a week, would you be open to that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anybody who wants to come and volunteer, more than welcome.
And what would you expect of these hypothetical volunteers?
I often.
I might be, put it like that.
What would we expect? Just to muck in, really. Just to muck in. I mean, if they could bring any skills, that would be great, if they could fusion spice or anything.
Yeah.
But it's really, there's so much digging going on in different places. It's laying out the duct, so you lay the duct out before the digger gets there. The digger does the bulk of the work, and some of these digger drivers are just like ballerinas. They can just, you know, they're beautiful when you watch the good digger drivers working. And then you have to lay the duct in the bottom of the trench, making sure it's very level, and you've not to let it wiggle from side to side. You have to keep it very straight, and then make sure there's no stones around it, and you just backfill with a spade. I tend to just bash the sides a bit and knock soft stuff down.
Yeah.
And just bed the ducting down nice and firmly with a nice covering on it, and then the digger can backfill it.
Perfect.
And tip all the stuff on.
As I said before, you have loads of videos on the that is really incredibly addictive viewing, it has to be said. It's if you're any way interested in this at all, have a look at all the videos. Just before we go, how many homes have you connected up now?
We connected the first batch of, I think it was 9 in Cuoma, which is one end of the dig, in October. And since then, the rest of Cuoma, it's not a big village, there's only about 40 houses altogether, I think, in Cuoma. I can't remember, actually. Most of those are on. And we were going to have a sort of a big splash, oh yes, we're live, here's a gig and everything, in October. And then another village said, we want to get going. And we got sidetracked helping them. And what this village was, it's a village that has broadband, but it's all very slow. And all the people who have it are always moaning about it because they're quite a long way from the exchange.
Yeah.
And two people in the village said, when are you going to bring it to us? And we said, well, we're not. You are when you're ready. And they said, well, what do we have to do? And we said, well, we're going to connect you to the geodark fibre, which is 3.5 kilometres from your village. And so you have to route walk it, get permission off all the farmers on that route, and ask the farmers to dig that bit, or get somebody to dig that bit for the farmers, and get the ducting down to your village, and then we can start to connect the villagers. And they said, well, all the farmers whose land it is, when they walked the route, found out they were absentee landlords, so they were landowners that didn't actually live in the village. So they had nothing to gain by getting a connection, because there's no houses there. And so the villagers said, well, we've already bought shares in Van. If we buy some more, could we pay the diggers with those shares? So we'll pay the diggers and take the money in shares, because we pay £1.50 a metre for the farmer to dig the land. And a lot of the farmers are doing that, because these farmers don't live there. So we thought, well, that's a novel idea. So they hired some digger men, and they dug all the 3.5 kilometres in, and they got paid £1.50 a metre, and then they paid in shares, and then they paid cash to the digger men. So,
But those trenches are now on absentee landlord's land, so how does that work?
The landlords gave way leave, so they didn't mind the fibre going through.
Oh,
there's no objection
didn't want
to it.
Oh, okay.
They just didn't want to dig it themselves and get shares, because some of them are just, old ladies, actually. Yeah, there's some old ladies on the land, and they just rent it out, you see. And so...
But they didn't
have any
objection.
That worked very well. That got it to the village. All the villagers saw these diggers in the fields and came to see what was going on. A lot of them came to help, mostly retired people, either early retired or fully retired people, ladies as well. And we had 3 doctors actually working in the trenches just as labourers. And they got really interested in it. And the first question they ask you when you're in the trench working with them is, I live over there, how do I get it to my house? And when you explain, well, we've got to get down to there, and then we come across there, and then we can dig one to your house. And they get really into it, and they dig into their house, quite often through the garden with spades. And then the neighbour says, well, you've got it. How do I get it? And so they tell him, and they go and help him. And this is how it goes. And then the next door neighbour can't dig because they're an invalid. Yeah. So they go and dig theirs as well. And they form these working groups. And like I say, there's organisers come through who order the duct, make sure there's enough duct, you know, make sure the route's in the right place, make sure the maps are right. And they just connect to nearly every house in the village. They've got 80% take up.
I seriously don't know why this isn't a movie, you know. All we need is
there has been talk of it, and if it is made into a movie, I want Julie Walters to be me. Because I think she's the closest thing to me as a comedian.
we have all the ingredients now. We have the Women's Institute getting involved, so we've got
that's awesome.
You need some sort of digger guy from, you know, technic from the city. You can just see it now. Listen, the last time we spoke, and I've been very interested in wondering about this, has it happened? You were saying that one person objected before, and you were going to reroute around their house. So what
we did, yes. We still haven't connected that village anyway.
Yeah.
But we've got another route, and we don't have to go through his land. We've had another one since, just one, and it's one house in the village we're working in now, and it's just one little bit of a field that he owns, and that one little bit, it's only 100 metres. Yeah. If we could go over that 100 metres, that would save us thousands of pounds to get to a school and five houses. And we will get to the school and five houses.
Obviously, yes, but...
Oh, yeah, but it will cost us a lot of money to go round rather than going across this little bit of a field. And he's just insistent he doesn't want us going on his field. And he's quite happy with his 3G dongle. So, what can you do?
More power.
You just have to go around them. You do get odd people like
that, and
it can't be helped, and you can't hold it against them. They're entitled not to have you on the field if they don't want you. So,
that's true.
But it's very frustrating when you find out something like that, and you sort of seethe for a bit and want to go around and shout at them, but you don't, and you just settle, and then you think, oh, well, we'll move on. There's bound to be one, isn't there?
But it's
and
not,
everybody's...
Yeah, it's not like as if it's, you know, there's any health concerns. I mean, it's a flashing light.
There's absolutely no reason for it, but some people are just obstinate. And this particular person is convinced that BT is going to bring in super fast broadband because they've told him so. And they're always telling you, they tell you on the television, they tell you on adverts, they tell you on circulars. Everybody's going to get super fast broadband from BT. And a lot of people will get super fast, but not our villages. That's why we're doing this.
But their super fast isn't going to be ever as fast as your super fast, because yours is actually
No, and ours is going to be so much cheaper as well, because it's our own network and we're peering, so we don't have to pay the middleman. The two middlemen, we don't have to pay wholesale or Openreach. You know, we just straight through to peering, and we can go as fast as we want, whenever we want.
Yeah.
Trouble is, we can't really use a gig at the moment because our computers aren't good enough.
Well,
we can't even measure a gig, actually. It's really, really hard to measure a gig because nobody can serve you a gig.
I can actually hear the listeners to this podcast going, oh my God, let me over there. I'll get up to a gig.
Well, we've won geeky guy who brought his laptop when we had the BBC over last week.
Yeah.
And this geeky guy brought his brand new Windows 8 laptop with no virus protection, no firewalls, no rubbish on it. And he just plugged straight into the Ethernet, and he got 940, I think, was his best score from a server in Amsterdam. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was a server in Manchester.
Yeah.
And that was his best score.
Have you had any interest in people setting up a little data centre or something in a shed somewhere there?
Not yet. I'm hoping that'll come. Maybe it'll come from this podcast, like the sponsored duck came from the last one.
Yeah. A
data centre would be great.
Yeah, it doesn't take much, actually.
And
looking at the weather over there, you wouldn't have to pay for cooling that much either.
No, you wouldn't. That's a fact. Today's the first day I've been working without my coat on. Yeah. It's been beautiful here today. I think this is our summer, February. This will be our summer. It was last year. We had February and March were okay, and then it rained every day since.
Yeah, I know, and it looks like it. It really, really looks miserable in some of the some of the shots. It has to be said.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris.
Holding the tent down is the biggest problem. We've wrecked our tent now. The wind has just wrecked it, and so now we've got scaffolding poles. So in my little van, I've got 4 scaffolding poles, and we take those down to the holes in the ground where we're working, and we jump on them so they're stuck in the ground.
Yeah.
And then we throw a tarpaulin over and climb into them and fuse in those.
Yeah.
You can't fuse when it's windy, you see.
Exactly. Well,
you've got to be very clean and no wind and no muck blowing in.
Yeah.
So we have that now.
It's for the people listening, what you'll see is that the fibre can only go so far within the ducts, and then you blow it through, and then you come to a particular house where you split off some of the fibres, continues on to the other houses, and then some of the fibres split off for a particular area. And you see the land is completely mucky, as it would be because it's January, February, you know.
But it's been like that all summer.
Yeah.
We've had to dam the trenches, so we put a dam in the trench to catch the water, then the digger can carry on digging, and we make the water run off down the field and drain it off as best we can, and then backfill the trenches. But the trenches can often fill up with water faster than you can dig them out because the ground is so wet. So we can't use the little diggers that the farmers were going to dig with. Most farmers have a little digger on the back of the tractor or a little mini digger, but you can't go on the land with those. And so we've had to bring in the big diggers and actually pay the big diggers. And this is where the share ideas come in, where the people pay the diggers and then take the wages that the diggers would have had in shares, because, of course, the digger men can't afford to work for shares with families and mortgages. And so whereas the farmers could have done, 100 metres today and 100 metres next week and just got their dig done. That's not worked. It's not worked that way. That was our plan, but it didn't work. And so the community themselves came up with the solution, which was, well, we'll pay the digger men and we'll take the £1.50 metre in shares. And some have made a profit on it. They've got more shares than it cost them. The actual Arcombe dig was 3.5 kilometres, which would have been 1.50 metres. What's that? I can't work it out, but the actual dig only cost $4,430.
Yeah.
You know, that's how things work, and they're savvy enough to work these things out for themselves, and they also know they get 30% tax back when they buy the shares. So that's, if you buy £1,000 of shares, you get £300 back off the government straight away as cash. So that's like 10% of your interest for you, isn't it?
Yeah,
if you're a taxpayer. So they've worked that out as well. So the best laid plans and all that, it's all changed because the community actually come up with ideas themselves to get around all these issues.
Well, I must say, I'll and you see that in the videos as well, as you're taking out the fibre. What do you call that? Weaving the figure of eight thing? You see
when you're fleeting it.
Yeah,
that was one of our retired ladies, fleeting the fibre.
Fleeting the fibre.
She sat down and did it. She sat down on the tarpaulin and fleeted the fibre for us.
Yes, and there are two big flower pots holding
Figure of eight
together.
We couldn't keep the figure of eight neat.
Yeah.
And this fellow said, I'll chuck you these flower pots over. So, but since then, our woodworking man, we've got this woodworking man, a carpenter, and he's fitted our trailer out with these great shelves that hold everything and a drop-down table.
Yeah.
And he's made us bullet holders out of wood. And so instead of having to pay £100-odd for a metal bullet holder, he's made us some wooden ones. And there's some pictures of them gurning through it. They look like toilet seats, actually. But they hold the bullets firmly while you're working in them. He's made us a fleeting board. So this board, it just holds the middle of the figure of eight for us on the tarpaulin.
Perfect.
Because some of the blows, you can't blow. I think that our next blow to Abbeystead is 7 kilometres.
Yeah.
But we can't blow that all in one go. So we'll have to keep breaking out at these access chambers and fleeting it.
So you'll blow through. You do 100 metres or so and then...
you'll blow, well, our access chambers are every 500 metres.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll probably be able, if we're lucky, we'll blow to the second one, 1,000 metres. If we're not lucky, we'll just get to the 500 metres one and blow 6.5 kilometres through.
Yeah.
And all that will have to be fleeted.
So you do 6.5 kilometres in the first one, five.
I think what we'll do, we've got a 3.5 kilometre blow up from Arcombe. I think we'll attempt that first and see how far we can get before we attempt the big blow. And we might have to have a join in the middle.
Yeah.
So instead of trying to blow 7 kilometres, we'll try and blow 3.
Okay.
And then join it in the middle. It's only, you know, 144 splices only.
<Ooh.
laughs> you know, the fewer joins you have, the better. So we'll fleet as much as we can. But when you're fleeted, you've got to have enough men there to turn your bundle over.
Yeah,
because you blow it from the other side, you see.
Yeah, and it's you have five kilometres of cable turning that over. That's a lot of
It will be an awful lot,
yeah.
We'll probably do it in two goes. I don't know how we'll do that. But we'll think of something when the time comes.
Yeah.
It's all dug in ready now. It's actually ready to blow, is that one. But they haven't got it into the cabinet yet. They're about, I think, 5 metres short of the cabinet now. They've got it to the school, and then they've got to cross the road and then into the cabinet. So the bulk of the dig is done now to the very end of our network, which is Abbeystead. But then they're branching off in other directions now, because other villages say, well, how much will it cost for you to come to us? And we say, well, we'll get to you eventually, but if you want it now, it will cost you X amount of pounds. So they'll just go around and get shareholders to cough it up. And they get the duck. And then they start digging, and that surprised us as well, you know, because we were focusing on the really desperate people. But these are people that we didn't think we were that desperate, but they must be, because they're doing it.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Chris, if I had the choice here, right, and, you know, I've got 40 megabits available to me, I would still like to have a gigabit.
Yeah.
And I did. Honest to God, I would dig. I'd be on that digger. I'd be down in the trench.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. That is just what they're doing. They're just getting on with it. And we had a business park came to us, and they said, you know, I know we're way off your radar at the moment, but would you consider coming to us? And we said yes. And they said, would we be able to buy the feed off you and feed our village ourselves and run our own, you know, ISP? And we said, yeah, of course. You know, we're open access. Anybody can. And we've got four Wi-Fi networks now wanting to buy a feed off us, which we're going to supply. And we're feeding my network. My network is Wenet, which is the... and we're waiting for fibre. You know, we are going to dig. But we still got a wireless network that's very good. So we don't have to rush to get ourselves on until we've got everybody else on.
Yeah.
And so we've put the barn feed into the Wenet network now. So we're paying the same for... it's a gigabit feed, but of course you can't do a gigabit through wireless. But we're getting about 40 meg symmetrical, quite nicely through fairly cheap equipment. Fairly cheap equipment. It's only sort of £100 a house. The equipment we use, and it's been in. You know, we've not just put it in. It's been in a bit. So we've just coupled our feed into that. Put another transmitter up. And we're getting 40 meg symmetrical for the same price we were paying the county council for 2 meg at 5-1 contended. And
yes,
we're getting
a pure
gigabit. If we had a better transmitter, we'd have a gigabit.
Yeah. Tell me, have you done anything with the wireless, GSM, that sort of thing? Regular mobile 4G?
We've no 4G in this area. We're very, very limited 3G, apart from the one man who can actually get it and doesn't want us going through his field. Most of us can't get it on our phones, but we can get it on the MiFi and the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
With the better transmitters, we can pick
areas,
it up in quite a few... But there's only one mast in the area for 3G. And unless you've got a fairly good line of sight to it, you haven't much chance. And most villages are in the bottom of valleys, you know, where the rivers are. and so most of the villagers can't get it, but quite a few, no, well, quite a few people could get it if they got a MiFi.
Yeah.
But it's not very good.
No.
And in a lot of the area, you can't even get the 2G. You can't get any mobile at all in some areas.
Have any of those companies expressed an interest in getting the backhaul from you guys?
Not yet. They probably don't know we exist.
I did see one of the videos. There was a BT engineer up there saying that it was a great idea what you were doing.
Yes, but and he said that he couldn't, with the best will in the world, BT could never help us. He did say that on the one show.
And why doesn't this guy with the 100-meter thing? Anyway, leave him off, as you say yourself.
What we said as a committee, we had to have a vote on it, actually. Half of us said, anybody who won't let us on their land and doesn't want a connection will never, ever get a connection. Half of us agreed to that. And the other half said, that's not really fair because his children might want a connection or they might sell the house and the new people who buy it might want a connection. So we said, right, well, fair enough. If that happens or if they change their mind, they can have a connection, but it will cost them whatever it costs us to go around them.
Yeah.
Because this is our money. This is our shareholders' money we're having to spend now to go around this person. And it's only fair that money is put back into the pot to help pay back our shareholders if that person decides they do want a connection after all. And we voted on it, and that's what the committee decided. And it will take the whole of the shareholders to change that now at a public vote. So that's what we've decided.
That would be an interesting thing to communicate to any potential buyers of a property in the area.
Well, actually, you've got to do a search if you're buying a property.
Yeah.
And it's up to the estate agents and the lawyers to do a proper search on your property. And if your property hasn't got the broadband that every other property in the street has, it's up to them to find out why.
Yeah.
And it will be, they'll have to come to BAN and say, how much will it cost for this property to have a connection? And we will look up our records and we will say, it costs us £20,000 to go around that house. And so that house will cost £20,000. If it's somebody who just didn't want a connection, that's fine. It will cost them £150. Because that's today's price. I mean, it might go up in the future.
Yeah.
It's today's price because it's all being built by volunteers.
Yeah.
And we have to keep it a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And if you're putting, like tonight, we've just put 8 houses on a bullet. If we had to go back and visit that chamber just for one house, we'd probably have to charge more, I don't know, in the future. But at the moment, it's £150 for a connection.
And those 8 houses tonight have 1 gigabit Ethernet connection?
Well, no, because that was just the bullet. The houses themselves are fused.
Yeah.
The bullet is now in place and done. And then tomorrow, we're doing the cabinet. And if those 8 houses are on the list in the cabinet, and if it gets done tomorrow, yes, they will go live tomorrow. But if something goes wrong tomorrow and those trays aren't done, because it's just me and another volunteer tomorrow using in the cabinet.
So that's
until our fusion spicer man's better.
Okay, and if there were listeners from Hacker Public Radio in the UK and had some of these skills, they'll have your email address and then they
it's
can
just anything
you.
At ban.org.uk and it'll come into the system and we'll pick them up if they want to come and help or come and visit. We're finding the holiday cottages are getting booked up very fast.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Any of the holiday cottages connected to the network?
We've got 2 in Cuomo connected to the network and we've got 2 in a bed and breakfast in Arcombe connected to the network. And we've another, we got another 5 on last week in Arcombe. So, and then there's another 32 due to go live as soon as we get the cabinet work done. And there's another, another 40 still to get the equipment screwed on in the houses. And the guys tend to go around and do a few of those every day, especially on wet days. That's where you'll find them in houses.
Okay.
Yeah, and they've been rolling out a whole load of duck today for another row of houses in Arcombe. So that village is almost done. They've done a sterling work. I can't get over how the community is pulled together. And when you go around talking to them and they say, you know, I didn't know this chap, and I've lived here for 20 years, and isn't he wonderful? And you know, they're all meeting up with each other now, and it's just amazing the cohesion it builds.
Of course, now
most people are out at work all day, and then they're catching up with the housework and the shopping and cleaning and ironing and everything, and they don't mix like they used to do. So you can live in a street and not know your neighbours very well, and they're all mucking in together and getting to know each other and going round to each other's houses and nattering and, you know,
joining
meetings. Like the old days.
Now that you've given them internet, they'll never have to leave their house again.
Well, you know, everybody says, oh, you get in front of a computer and you're antisocial and you just sit there all the time, but actually getting this connection has made people leave the computers and mix and do things and help each other. You know, they're helping each other is the amazing thing. There's one lady, she was actually on the BBC report last week, and she's going to sort of help mastermind our help desk, because we don't want to farm it out. We want everybody to help each other, but somebody has to sort of be a central point and organise it a bit. And she's offered to do it because she's a retired IT person and she's a farmer's wife, and they all know her and trust her. And she's had two queries this week. How do you get your wanna-do email when you're not on wanna-do anymore?
Good question.
Well, we say, I mean, we'll do a mail server of our own one day, just like we'll do our own VoIP one day when we've got the network built. But we just say, well, just get a Gmail address. And they say, well, what's Gmail? You know, and what we do is we get a Gmail address, and then if you want to be posh, you can buy a domain name for $4.99 a year, isn't it, for a nice domain name. And then you get Gmail to pretend it's sending from that, and it's quite easy to set up, and this lady knows how to do it, and so she's going around showing people how to do it, and then they're supposed to show somebody else how to do it. Whether it works that way, I don't know. But we at Barn, we have a Gmail address, and it's b4ruralnorth@gmail.com, but we tell it to use barn.org.uk, and that's how we do it. So they can all do the same. So instead of this man who emailed the other day, he said he has his business name, like Fred's Tires or something, at wannado.co.uk. And I said, well, it's not really a good business name at wannado.co.uk. Why don't you have info@fredstires.co.uk? It'll only cost you £5 a year. Yeah. Get a Gmail address and farm it through that. Yeah. And then you've got a posh domain name. You also get free website if you want it, free photo storage, you know, free everything with Google. So, and the same with your VoIP. You know, we are going to do our own Asterisk server one day when somebody rises through the ranks who wants to do it, and there's one or two looking, you know, shapely. But we're saying try Vonage. Nothing wrong with Vonage. It costs you £0.01 for a little atta to plug in to our equipment. Yeah. And you've got your phone line then. You don't have to pay £15 a month to BT then. And you can keep the same number. And you can have calls diverted to your mobile. And loads of free services with it. And unlimited free calls for, I think it's $5.99 a month. And there's loads of companies like Vonage. You know, Vonage is just one, just like Gmail, just one email service. Hotmail or Yahoo Mail or any mail.
But there's
all free.
I see in my future like a barn up there in Barn. you know, just housing a few servers and a few local guys running Linux services off it for the community. I mean, there's a business there.
Yeah.
And yeah, not only for the community, but also anywhere. Because, okay.
It's unlimited. What's possible in the future is unlimited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very impressed with what you're doing. And again, it's been one of the most requested follow-ups that we've ever had here in HPR. So,
well, everybody wants to come here for the rollages and see it for themselves.
They do. I've actually told
try
them.
And get a gig on a speed test if you can.
Don't worry, I can, and I won't be using a Windows 8 machine to do it either. But yes, I will be able to reach that speed. Chris, listen, thanks very much for taking the time again.
It's a pleasure.
And
anytime.
We wish you all the absolute best.
Okay, right. Get us a data centre now.
yeah, exactly. I'm going to have to come over and visit first. I know I promised last year. All right, Chris, thanks very much for the time.
It's a pleasure.
All right, cheerio.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.